This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Glad you're joining us. It's hour number two rolling along this morning. Again, Final Four in Houston, and that is where we're at today as we continue our coverage of the Final Four. UConn coming in as the favorite, but, again, the Miami Hurricanes and the Florida Atlantic Owls and the San Diego State Aztecs have shown a lot in this tournament that any one of these four teams winning this wouldn't be all that surprising. And looking at Florida Atlantic in particular, their win against Tennessee, a shorthanded Tennessee team nonetheless, and Kansas State, and going back, that game that went back and forth, and then Florida Atlantic was able to close that thing out. These are teams that have done enough in this tournament to make us sort of wake up and sort of see who they are and what they are. Nevertheless, they're at least in the Florida Atlantic world, that's still a Cinderella-ish story, even though we talked in hour number one that they don't like the term. It seems like teams don't like that term because they want the respect all the way through. If you're a team in the top 25, if you're a team that is winning 31 games, there shouldn't be that surprising that you got invited to the ball. But the reality of it is that we live in a culture where we expect certain teams to make it and certain teams to entertain us and then sort of disappear and go away. But Florida Atlantic was a good enough team to have won 31 games during the regular season and playing enough team basketball that don't rely on one individual that they could take a team effort and take down two teams that were seeded really high in Tennessee and Kansas State. But that being said, San Diego State is one of those teams that has been on the rise. Ted Leitner is going to join us later on this hour to talk about the Aztecs. Remember, Steve Fisher was the coach after Bill Frieda left Michigan in 1989. He guided the Michigan Wolverines to a championship. Ramil Robinson at the free throw line, and they beat Seton Hall in the championship game. He then went to San Diego State, was there for a long time helping build that program up. Got to a point where, Kawhi Leonard played for San Diego State. They had tremendous defense, but they never were able to put together a good tournament run, and now they've put together a fantastic tournament run. And UConn will play Miami. Jim Larrañaga, who went to the Final Four in 2006 with George Mason, has finally got that team to the Final Four. And for UConn, when they get to the Final Four, they usually win the whole thing. They've been there five times previously. This is their sixth appearance. They have four national championships. The only time they did not win it was in 2009. We're also keeping a look on the NFL because any moment, any day, we could get the news that Aaron Rodgers is going to be traded to the Jets. We don't have it yet. And we're still waiting out the Lamar Jackson situation. But Charles Robinson at Yahoo Sports had a very interesting point that if you are the Packers and you are going back and forth with the Jets and it feels like what is bogging down the negotiations is something that most of us thought would bog down the negotiations, which is the Jets don't want to give up everything for a guy they're not sure is going to play beyond the 2023 season. So the Jets are trying to say, look, we can give you this package that can be upgraded if Aaron Rodgers plays an additional year or two. So we can give you, for example, a second-round pick that would be the first-round pick if Aaron Rodgers plays in 2024. We can give you a second-round pick that turns into two second-round picks, whatever it may be, whatever that they've got at their disposal. So there's a little bit of a bog down in that regard. But Charles Robinson says, here's a date to circle on the calendar because Aaron Rodgers might be savvy enough to do this, which is April 17th is the day for the first workouts where players can report to the facility to actually do team workouts. Now, if you're Aaron Rodgers and nothing has been done, would you show up to the Packers facility and say, ready to work, boss? Yep, ready to work for the upcoming season. Here I am. Would you do that? Or would you say, you know what? I'm going to make my presence known enough so that the Packers realize maybe we should be getting quick on this. And by the way, April 17th is coming up in like a little over 2 weeks. But it's something that I would wonder if Aaron Rodgers would actually do. Would he show up just to remind the Packers that he is still under contract to play for them? And if they don't want him to play for them, does he remind them that he is still there to say, can we get moving on this Jets deal? Now, if you're the Jets, I said this for a while, if you're the Jets, You want to make sure that you get the right value for Rodgers for what Rodgers is going to bring you. You're not getting a 31-year-old quarterback that you think you can squeeze 5 or 6 years out of. You're getting a 39-year-old quarterback that if you can get 2 or 3, you'd be elated. You might get 1. You might get 2. Heck, you might get 4. Who knows? But no doubt he is on the end of this journey rather than at the middle of the journey. So the Jets are buying basically an expiring quarterback that could announce, I'm done, I'm out, my body's not going to make it. I'm not Tom Brady, right?
I asked our local super fan in the building.
Yeah.
I'm sure you talked to him for a little bit,
too. I did. I talked to him a little bit,
Jake Asman.
Yeah.
He's not really thrilled about it.
Right, because they could be giving up a ton.
Yeah, they could be giving up a ton for maybe a year.
This is one of the best young teams in the NFL that just needs a quarterback.
Yeah.
But there's no guarantee that he gets him a Super Bowl, and he might be there for 2 years. They get nothing out of it, and that's it.
Let's be real. We can guarantee he's not getting him a Super Bowl.
I can tell you right now. I would not. Take the field. What is it? Win Tiger in the field.
Aaron Rodgers of the field.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers of the field. Take the field.
Right? I mean, if the Jets moved into the NFC for a season,
sure,
I think he could get up to the Super Bowl then.
Absolutely.
But not this AFC. This AFC is way too loaded. And I'm sorry, you have just 3 guys off the top of my head. Josh Allen is due. We know that about him. But Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrows have proven that they're the teams right now that are going to get to the Super Bowl. Sorry, Aaron, that's not you.
Is this like that Geico commercial where the gecko is selling stuff in the yard sale? And he goes like, that's an antique.
Right.
Right? Is that what the Packers are trying to do?
Yeah.
Are the Packers going, 2 seconds? This is Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, but, I mean, come on. It's Aaron Rodgers. I mean, but it's 39-year-old Aaron Rodgers.
And they know, too. It's like, you're wanting to get rid of him. Yeah. I mean, they showed their hand yesterday.
That's right.
What's his name? Peter LaFleur. Peter LaFleur.
Matt right? LaFleur.
All right, him too.
You got him playing hockey for the Nordiques.
I was going off. What? I thought that was dodgeball.
Oh, maybe dodgeball.
That's what I was thinking of.
Dodgeball, that's right, yeah.
But he's showing his hand again, saying, fully expect Jordan Love to be the starter. It's like, you got no leverage?
As of today, your starting quarterback is Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
As of right now, it's Aaron Rodgers. That's what Charles Robinson was saying. If you're Rodgers, don't you show up on the 17th?
Yes.
You go, hi, here for work. We don't. No, I have a written contract that says I'm an employee
OTAs.
Of the Green Bay Packers. I'm here hanging out. Yeah, let's go over some film, shall we? Shall we? Should we talk about the upcoming season?
Yeah. And what are the new plays this year?
What are we going to do? What's the new thing? You want me to start throwing? What do you want me to do? How about this? You want me to start running at full speed? I'll do that.
Definitely do that.
You want me to go lift weights heavier than normal? How would you like me to do that? Huh? How would you like me to tear my ACL? Would you like me to do this? What are we doing here, guys? Let's get to work.
Yep.
I don't want to be here. You don't want me to be here. So let's make this happen because I will show up on April 17th and you will realize, oh boy, yeah, we still got him under contract. The Jordan Love era hasn't officially begun yet.
Yep. And then when you look at it on paper, God, we're really going to sit. That much money?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And that's always what it comes down to, kids. It's not, who's a better player. A lot of times it comes down to, he's getting like $50
million? Yeah.
Or something like that?
Something like that, yeah. And if you're the Jets, you have to be smart. You can't give up everything. You are not getting a 5-year guy here.
These two teams, they're the worst negotiators in the history of negotiation.
Right.
Because, like I said, you have Matt LaFleur sitting there going, it's like, oh, no, we want to go with Jordan Love. So it's like, okay, so Aaron is definitely available. You need him out of the house.
And the Jets are like, and we'll take this off the table and this off the table and this.
But at the same time, the Jets are going, no. We're all in on Aaron.
Yeah, because we haven't gone anywhere else.
We're not interested in Lamar Jackson at all.
Nope.
Where you could use that like, you know what? We can get him, probably lock him in for like at least a 3, 4, 5-year contract, and he'll fulfill it.
Exactly.
So, I mean, the two worst negotiating teams I've ever seen.
So, it could happen soon. It could happen later. Who knows? But, again, I'm That date, and I don't.
It'll happen Saturday.
I think you're right.
Or Monday night.
Exactly. The whole world is watching these games. Breaking news. Yeah.
Everyone's phone goes off at the same time.
Everybody's phone goes off at the same time. Exactly.
Be a sight to see in the arena.
I'm with you.
Energy Center.
They love doing that, don't they? They love it. But seriously, how frustrating has it got to be for at least Rodgers to be, can we just pull the trigger on this deal?
Yeah.
Like, everybody in the room wants this to happen. And I know it's not, you know, look, everybody wants to be protected. There's got to be something that you guys agree on that we can make this happen. And if you're the Packers, the other thing, too, is it's also public. You know, it's also sort of the way you are perceived in the public.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Aaron Rodgers has worn out a welcome a little bit, right? Where everybody's, you know, saying, all right, it's time to move on to Jordan Love. Maybe you've got most of the fan base agreeing that that's the way, the direction of the franchise. But if you have a player like that, even at 39 years old, you have a 4-time, you know, MVP here and a Super Bowl winner, you don't want to get fleeced on the other side either. You don't want to be like, we gave up Aaron Rodgers for what, a third and a fourth in 2026?
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing here? Like, we are supposed to get some really nice value for him, right?
I don't remember the Brett Favre situation being this messy.
Yeah, I don't either. But again,
it's like, felt like they traded him.
The same topic, though. A guy that's been toying with retirement, if you're getting him, you want to be like, and we're not giving up everything for a guy that's going to be here for 10 seconds, right? All right, Good, the Bad, and the Dumb is coming up next, and then Ted Leitner will join us to talk San Diego State basketball coming up this hour, as well as Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. Ron with two N's, please. We continue.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, time for the good, the bad, and the dumb, the Wednesday edition. Oh, lots of good to get to. Opening day tomorrow, Final Four this weekend, Masters next week. Oh, but what is the good of the day?
I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not happy about this good.
Okay.
But sometimes I have to be the bigger man.
Bigger man?
And give good where good is due.
Got it.
And that's to Giants pitcher Sergio Romo.
Yes.
See, I don't like the Giants.
You don't like the Giants.
I'm not allowed to like the
Giants.
That's
right.
But Sergio Romo pitched his final game yesterday.
He did.
And over the course of spring training, he made a deal with kids. And these young kids who would come up and ask for his autograph, he said, yes, I will sign your ball, I will sign your poster, I will sign your shirt, whatever it is. But first, you have to sign my hat. And so yesterday during this final, when he made his relief appearance and pitched in his final game, he was wearing the hat that was filled with all those kids' signatures.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I have to give good where good is due. I think that's fantastic.
That is really great. That's great. So did he go into spring training thinking it was it, or did he just
I think he did, because he signed like a – I think he only signed like a year deal, or maybe I don't even know if he signed a year deal. And this was another thing. I didn't realize he was 40.
I didn't either. I did not either. Yeah.
That was shocking to me. I feel like it was like, God, he's still young, but yeah. I guess he's been around that long, or we have.
That is pretty cool.
I thought it was a nice gesture. I liked it.
Yeah. And what a memory. And you take it with you into your pile of stuff when you're done. You're just the kids signing a hat.
Yeah.
Yeah. From my final game. That is really good. Good for them. All right, now the bad?
The bad.
All right.
Yeah, because, you know, that's not really bad.
No, that's good.
You know, even as a Dodgers fan, I got to sit there and tip my hat to Sergio Romo. That was a good gesture. I haven't seen that before.
Yeah.
But the bad of the day is, you remember that fishing scandal?
Okay, refresh my memory, but it had something to do with weights in the fish.
Well, yeah, these two guys, they were in all these fishing competitions and earning, you know, amassing hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash and prizes. And they where it was discovered by tips from other people who were in the audience saying, check the fish, that their fish not only were stuffed with other parts of fish, like bits and pieces of fish, were stuffed with lead weights. So it would seem like they had a heavier haul than everyone else, even though their fish were a little bit undersized compared to some of the others. Judgment Day came down for them yesterday. It was their sentencing day.
Uh-oh.
You ready for what they got?
Yeah.
They got their fishing licenses suspended for 3 years.
Wow.
And have to return their $100,000 boat that they won. And that's it.
So they don't get
a lot of people wanted to see them banned for life.
I was going
to
say, there should have been a banishment, right? Like,
not for 3 years.
Okay, so the fishing license, is that like, hey, Saturday morning, son, let's get out and fish? Like that?
If they probably have a private pond, they can go fishing that by themselves, but they can't go to the reservoir or the lake that everyone else is fishing at and fish. Legally.
Why do you need a fishing license?
I have no – I think it's to help control the fish population.
Maybe so.
I
don't know. Maybe. Do you have to take a class? Like, I don't fish, but I –
No, you don't have to take a class. You just have to pay.
You just have to get one.
Yeah. Okay. You can either pay for the day or you can pay for a year.
That's probably why you need a fishing license, just for them to just get some revenue.
Some money. Yeah.
I would – because I don't hunt or fish, so I'm talking way out of my league.
18 and over. I think it's – or 16 and over. I can't remember. Because my kids, they can go and fish all they want. So, you know, if I'm fishing, it's here. You hold the pole.
Right, right, yeah.
I'll cast it out for you, kid. But here, you hold it.
I don't hunt or fish. I live in Tennessee, which that makes me a unicorn practically. Yeah. You know, just the idea that I don't do either one of those things. But I get a hunting license, safety class, or just to show that you know what you're doing.
Right.
You know, like,
yeah,
this is what you're going for, right? Fishing, it just seems like it's just a way to make revenue.
I think it is. I mean, I know that a lot of places will stock lakes.
Yeah.
To, you know, they grow the fish somewhere else on a fish farm, and then they restock the lakes. And so you're paying for a small fee of that. But
so do you think it's punishment? Not punishment. Because I think they should have been suspended for
I think they should have suspended. Right. I think
it's
light.
That's plan out cheating, right?
That's light.
But
I mean, over a course of a couple of years, you are amassing hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash and prizes.
Do you think the idea of this of them being able to of spending 3 years not being able to casually fish is?
I mean, maybe this is their income.
That's like,
so now they got to go get a job somewhere.
And
would they be able to get a job? Like, what do they know best? They know fish.
Because I've been around.
Could they get a job at Bass Pro Shop? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either. I don't think it'd be around fish.
Yeah, I think they would be looked upon like Art Briles.
Right, right.
It's like, oh, you can't be
here. Can't be around them, yeah.
Although they could sell lead weights.
That's what they could do. How you cheat? I mean, why would you cheat at a fishing tournament? It seems like we have to know what you're doing.
Tony, a $100,000 bass boat.
But here's my problem.
First of all, I never knew a bass boat would be $100,000.
I know, right?
My God.
If I was cheating in a fishing tournament, this is how little I know. I would have caught the fish and it would have been like 17 inches, whatever it is, right? And then they would have weighed it and they're like, 527 pounds. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Hey, just a fat fish. These don't usually weigh this much. And then they would check and they'd find
me a special award for that one then.
Yeah, exactly. They would
reeled it in on a 10-pound test line.
They would find all sorts of stuff in there. But it would be just crammed with, you know, lead weights, metal bars, whatever I could shove in that fish's throat.
Gold bars.
Exactly.
Cash. So when the judge is looking, it's like, for you.
Anything that weighs, neutron star, anything that weighs a lot in a small amount. But yeah, no, that was a big deal. You and I were surprised what a big deal that was. That made
really
big news.
I mean, we had, and I know I brought it up in the good, the bad, the dumb, because I brought it up as a bad, or I might have brought it as a dumb, or it could have been a combo bad.
It could have been a combo, yeah.
Because it was really funny to me.
Yeah.
That you would, like you said, you would cheat at a fishing competition. But now it's just, here's the sentencing. I think it's kind of a slap on the wrist.
When I was at a radio station in New Hampshire that had an ice fishing tournament, you know, where they drill a hole.
Yeah.
And I remember that we had a sponsor that wanted us to read results of the daily ice fishing tournament. I had no idea what I was reading, but I had to put these on carts. I had to record them. So I was in the production room. They just give you a piece of paper, like, just read this. Just read the names. This is the name of the fish and how much it weighs. That's it. But I wanted to do it more in a sportscastery type of thing.
Right.
So I'm like, yeah, Mike Smith caught himself up. And I just went, I don't know what this is.
That's too funny.
I was like, so It took me forever. It's out of my knowledge.
The only thing that always bothered me about ice fishing, and I know I've seen it happen. I know it's not just cartoon or movies, but it would freak me out when people build a fire.
Yeah, no kidding.
To stay warm, right. And I get that you need to find a way to stay warm, or they put a big old heater on the ice. It's like, isn't that counterproductive?
I know.
Isn't that gonna melt?
I've been ice fishing a couple of times, man. It was a trip. It was a trip.
It's cold.
It's freezing, and then you not only are you fishing in the hut, you set fishing lines on the lake. So you got to walk out to the lines.
Oh, okay.
So you would leave the hut, and you'd have like little things. And you mean
you're not just fishing in the hut and the
you're
hole?
Fishing,
in the
there's
hut?
A hole in the hut. You're fishing in the hole. Then you go out and you check to see your lines that you've planted on the ice in various places. And I guess if like a little flag was up, it meant you had something. So you pull it in, drill a hole there too.
There you have it.
All right, what's the dumb of the day?
A group of meat scientists in Australia.
There's such thing as a meat scientist?
Meat scientists, yeah.
Okay.
They're from a company. It's the Vow Group or Vow Food. It's an Australian company seeking to change the way the world thinks about lab-grown meat.
Oh, I don't even know where to begin with this.
Yeah, well, I haven't got to the good part yet.
Okay, yeah.
Or to the dumb part.
Right.
They have successfully recreated, using actual DNA, a woolly mammoth.
Uh-oh.
And they made a woolly mammoth meatball.
Oh, okay. No. Mm-mm.
But everyone there is too chicken to try it.
I wouldn't go anywhere near it. I wouldn't.
Why?
Are we close to Jurassic Park food now?
They decided they first were trying to recreate a dodo bird, but the DNA sequencing wasn't working for them, so they moved on to the mammoth.
Is the dodo bird extinct?
I believe it is.
Okay.
I believe that, yeah. I think the last ones were on the Charles Darwin Island.
Yeah,
Galapagos Islands or something like that.
Dinosaurs had their chance. Nature chose them for extinction. Yeah, I don't think we need to be messing around with, like, T-bone Tyrannosaurus steaks.
I feel like that's how a zombie apocalypse happens.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, recreating meat that you weren't supposed to have.
I agree. All these zombie movies have, like, when nature kicks in with, like, some sort of fungus, it's going to be man-created.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, when we have the zombie apocalypse, we're going to create something.
Oh, it was our fault.
It's going to be our fault.
Completely
our
fault.
It's not nature kicking us back. It's going to be us making a mess of things.
Yeah.
And woolly mammoth meatballs is just the start of something much larger, people.
Kind of saucy, sir.
If the AI robots don't kill us, woolly mammoth meatballs will. Yeah, exactly. What kind of sauce?
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, Ted Leitner is going to join us coming up in 15 minutes. We're going to talk to him about San Diego State. So the Aztecs are a really fun story. They were a team that nobody was paying attention to for a very, very long time. They didn't have any winning seasons, and nobody cared. And as you and I were talking about, it's like, here, you're in San Diego. You're one of the most beautiful cities in America. Beautiful weather. And if your team is lousy at playing basketball, people have other things to do than go support a lousy basketball team. So Steve Fisher comes in. So Steve Fisher, as we're talking about, Steve Fisher took over Michigan, right? Bill Frieder had left. Steve Fisher took him and then won the championship in 1989. He stayed at Michigan. And then in the late 90s, 98, 99, I think, is when he arrived at San Diego State.
Yeah.
And when he arrived at San Diego State, he said he made like 60 appearances, public appearances that first year on behalf of the school. He was everywhere to promote San Diego State basketball. They won 5 games in Fisher's first year. He was giving away tickets on campus. He was like literally walking around campus, handing free tickets out to students, begging them to come to play basketball, to come to the basketball games. And so, but the team stunk. But slowly they started building a winning season. They started making the NCAA tournament. Kawhi Leonard was there in 2011. They were a 6 seed. So they started, they were a team that would have, hey, watch out for San Diego State. But they never really went far, far in the tournament. They never made a Final Four run or anything like that. So Fisher left in 2017. Now Brian Dutcher's taken over. Now, this is what I always find interesting. Whenever you've got a coaching change, but the coach that is taking over comes directly from the tree of the guy that is gone, then you wonder, is there any – what change, how much of a fingerprint is that individual putting on the team? John Shire is a perfect example of this. Shire was on Mike Krzyzewski's staff. He was the heir apparent. When Mike Krzyzewski announced that he was quitting, everyone knew John Shire was going to take over as head coach. So this season in his first year, people were wondering, well, how much of this team – and I remember asking this question before the ACC tournament. How much of this Duke team still has a Mike Krzyzewski feel to it, or has John Shire been able to put his implementation, what he wants, into this team? Well, Dutcher's been the head coach at San Diego State for six seasons. So he has been able to put not only a Brian Dutcher fingerprint, a handprint, everything on this program. These are not Steve Fisher's guys that he's coaching like you get when you get other coaching changes that are immediately. He's been around for a while. There's still a Steve Fisher identity to this team because he's the guy that got there and built it, and Dutcher has now taken over. He arrived with Fisher when they both came in from Michigan. So it's a curious team because they've always been known for good defense, and this is the deepest run they've ever made, but they've had really good seasons. So I'm kind of interested to see what Ted Leitner says about this team.
Yeah, because, I mean, it feels like it's one of those up-and-coming teams that's been kind of lingering now for a while.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, almost like, you know, they almost feels like they're in the tournament every single year.
Yeah, it does. It does. I mean, they play in the Mountain West, and the Mountain West has gotten better and better at it.
Yeah.
And they've gotten a little bit more
and
fine-tuned.
I think I'm pretty certain they're one of the teams that is being looked upon to fill the holes in the Pac-12.
Yeah. I think there were four teams from the Mountain West this year that got in. It was San Diego State, yeah. Utah State, Nevada was in because they were in the play-in game, and I think Boise State.
Right.
Those were the four teams that were in. So it's a good conference. And, yeah, there's a little bit of the Pac-12 gobbling that will probably happen to some of these schools. But it's not a come out of nowhere story, like Florida Atlantic. I'm sorry, that's a come from nowhere story, right?
Yeah, because they're Conference USA, and you know, most people didn't. I think most people were like me. I didn't even know they were in Boca Raton.
Yeah, right. I didn't either. Right.
And I'm still not 100% sure where Boca Raton is in Florida.
Right.
I just know it is in Florida.
Yeah. That's north of Miami.
I know. Well, you went over the map.
I went over the map yesterday.
I know where Miami is. I know where Fort Lauderdale is, and you're telling me it's in the middle.
Yeah. Well, I did live in West Palm Beach for a little bit, trying to help an expansion basketball team on the rise. That didn't go very far. We had a lot of problems with that. We had a logo and an office and everything. And that was it.
Did you even have basketballs?
No. We had a coach. We had a coach hired. Well, we had a coach hired in agreement, right? But I was there. I wasn't sure if I was going to stay. I was there to help. I was with the Tampa Bay Thunderdogs. I was here helping them launch it.
You're like a consultant, if you will.
If you will. Wish I was paid like a consultant. I wish the checks actually cashed. such a fun time of economic despair during minor league basketball. Best time, not the most calm time. Let me put it that way.
I can imagine.
You know, it's like those memories that you have where with hindsight, it's like, that was so much fun.
Oh, yeah.
So much fun. I learned a lot. I had such a blast. But you remember like every paycheck running to the bank. Like, is this going to cash?
Yep.
Like, is there enough money?
I just got it. Let's put it in now.
Payroll? Yeah, exactly.
Before,
are we going to make it?
Before Susie over there cashes her check and takes my money away.
Exactly. So that's kind of was my joy of working in minor league hoops. But, so there was West Palm Beach. There was Boca, Fort Lauderdale, Miami.
But it just feels like, you know, I mean, obviously UConn has been here before, so we shouldn't think anything. But, you know, for Miami not having this being their first Final Four.
Right.
You know, and San Diego State, it being there, like, it feels like those teams should have been here before.
That's the kind of the way, you're right, you're right. And again, people want to be blown away by this, yeah. But if you had Miami in a Final Four in any other year as a 5 seed, you wouldn't blink an eye.
Yeah.
If you had San Diego State as a 5 seed in any other Final Four with a Duke or a Villanova, you wouldn't blink an eye. It's that you've got those two plus a 9 and a 4 – that make you feel like this is like This is the most insane bracket ever. This bracket is just has thrown up on itself. It's so messy.
I got an alert on the phone yesterday. I think it was a Bleacher Report article or something like this. Like, see, you know, look at the past of these eight different brackets that predicted these four in the Final Four. I'm like, how in the world?
How did that happen?
It makes sense to me that it was only eight of you out there.
Right.
Eight insane people. You know, probably this was like your 18th bracket that you submitted this year just because.
How did you get those four? Each one of those eight should be given $5 million apiece for pulling that off.
And they're not perfect brackets, obviously.
But they still got
this Final Four correct?
Let me tell you something. If I did that, I'd be wearing a shirt that said I called that.
I would have the bracket on my shirt.
You would have
a printout screen of saying, look, you know, I'm front and back.
I'm happy when I get two Final Four teams. And they're usually teams everybody else is predicted to go to the Final
UConn,
Four.
Like UConn, I get. UConn, you know, everyone was talking highly about UConn going in. Yeah. I probably should have put a little more weight into them, but I thought UConn was going to lose against UCLA. Was it UCLA? Yeah, no. I had UConn losing earlier.
Which pundit? I want to say it was Seth Davis, but I'm not sure, so don't hold me to that. One of them jumped on UConn Selection Sunday immediately.
Just like said, this pathway.
That watch for UConn. Fantastic basketball team. Got a good draw here at four. Underseeded. I think it was Seth Davis, but it might have been somebody else. Nevertheless, one of them did. One of them jumped off.
That's the only one that makes sense.
Yeah, right.
You know,
in the world do you get Florida Atlantic in there unless you totally bought into Conference USA as a
Even though you and I just got done saying, you know, Miami being in the Final Four, it makes sense. San Diego State being in the Final Four, it makes sense. I'm still shocked that they're there.
I am too.
And, you know, just, I mean, especially having both of them there at the same time. I never would have predicted that.
And the thing is, and this is no disrespect to Florida Atlantic, because if they're going to be disrespected by Cinderella, they'll probably be disrespected by a number of things. But I saw a Tennessee team figure it out against Duke. I saw a Tennessee team that went, no Zakai Ziegler, we know what we're going to do now. We know how to play this. This is the way we're going to play. We found an identity. Didn't matter. Did not matter at all. Florida Atlantic took them right out of that game.
Yeah, they did.
Took them right out of that game. Kansas State, watch Marquise Noel in the Sweet 16. He was magnificent, right? Nope. They took him out of that game, too. Made him make some different weird decisions en route to this.
Yeah.
So, excuse me. And then with San Diego State, I mean, that game against Creighton was a classic. I mean, it was a back-and-forth affair. I mean, that was as good.
Yeah, and controversial.
And controversial, too.
You know, I mean, we'll never really know if they were truly deserving.
Right, right.
You know, but I mean, it doesn't matter at this point. You know, that's the past is the past, and now they're looking forward. If they win they beat Florida Atlantic, it's going to be like, yeah, you guys, it's not surprising that you guys beat Florida Atlantic. You guys are supposed to be here.
I wonder in the end if it's, when it's all done on Monday, is this one of the memorable Final Fours based on who wins this?
Because,
again, if UConn blows out Miami and blows out the winner, it's probably forgettable. But if any one of those three teams puts up a fight or wins it, it might be one of the more memorable Final Fours we've had, given the teams that are in it. Ted Leitner is going to join us, talk some Aztec basketball as they get ready for Saturday's showdown with Florida Atlantic as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, the Final Four in Houston as San Diego State will take on Florida Atlantic in the semifinals. And San Diego State out of the Mountain West Conference. Ted Leitner joins us on a Progressive guest line. Progressive Insurance, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Visit them for a quote at progressive.com today. How are you, Ted? Thanks for joining us this morning.
Tony, I'm good. I'm good. How's things?
I'm great. Thank you so much. All right, so San Diego State, Mountain West Conference, but feels like a team that has been building and building and building toward this. Is one of those teams that kind of pops up in the tournament. People talk about how good defensively they are. Was this team different at the beginning of the season, or did it feel like, all right, this is another good San Diego State team, let's see what happens, or was Brian Dutcher building something a little different?
I think people had great anticipation, and it wasn't because there were a couple of great players. It wasn't, you know, like the 2010 season when Kawhi Leonard was there, and you thought, "Whoa,
yeah.
This guy's a pro now." And the people around him were just is a fantastic team. So you knew the difference with this one was no superstar. Matt Bradley's a terrific player, but he's not a superstar. He's not a Kawhi, certainly. But they had depth, but unbelievable depth. They'd always go and start and think, wow, they're going to start that five. What about that guy? He can start too. So will you have a problem with that? And the answer was, with this type of team, with these kind of guys who are really different, they honestly, it's not just talk, they don't care if they start. They only want to win. And unselfishly, they don't care about how much they scored. They don't check a box score at the end to see what they did. It's a very unusual team, I believe, in this day and age of me. So the anticipation was, wow, with this depth and all these guys who can come off the bench and score and play Aztec defense, which has been going on for 10, 15 years, then this is really, what is this going to be like? What happened was, at the beginning, they would either score prolifically, there's a big word,
right,
or they wouldn't score at all. And that continued, but they improved overall. And when they go to the first media timeout, they bring in three other type starters. It has tremendous depth, and that's what killed Alabama, and they were able to beat number one. So they've gotten better and better with a squad that's as deep as any team in the country.
Their defense, and they've been known for this physical defense for a number of years, but as a guy that's there courtside watching every game, how do you determine whether or not are they going to get away with some stuff tonight, or are the officials going to let them do what they do tonight? Because that was sort of what people were pointing to in the Creighton game, was watch early. If they're loose on the whistle, this is going to happen. If they're tight on the whistle, this may happen.
No question. And those guys, and I think I love that, because some of these games are just absurd with the free throw-a-thon.
Right.
And that's not what people paid to go see. I thought the officials let them play in the Creighton game, and for the most part also in Alabama. So it depends on the officials and what they're looking to do. And in that particular game, that was typical Aztec, try to wear them down even more so against Alabama, which nobody thought they had a chance to win. So, yeah, it does depend how the game is called, but they are big, they are tough. And I got a first read on that in the Mountain West tournament in Las Vegas. And when other broadcasters and people from other teams just come up and say, you know, I look at your club and think, when they take the courts, an NBA team.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the linebackers and tight ends and big muscular guys who really, really play tough. And that has gotten them here.
Has that always been the case? Does that go back to Steve Fisher philosophy? I mean, Brian Dutcher and them go hand in hand. Is that just something that's carried over the years?
Great question, Tony. Great question. And the answer is yes, because people thought maybe it started with Steve Fisher and San Diego State. It didn't. It started with Steve Fisher at Michigan.
Nice.
With Brian Dutcher, with the Fab Five. And it didn't matter if you were Jalen Rose or the biggest superstar in the world. The theory was, and the concept was, if you don't play defense here with the Fab Five at Michigan for Steve, you're going to be sitting next to Steve on the bench. There was never a doubt. You had to play defense no matter how great you were offensively. And he brought that to San Diego State. And guys like Kawhi, who could defend from day one as an Aztec, just enormous, long arms, and tremendous hands. And that's why he went there. That's why other people go there. They talk to friends of theirs and say, hey, man, you love it here. You're a gym rat. Just like these guys. They're in the gym at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning. They got their little key cards. They get them in anytime they want. And they go and they practice and practice and practice. And you've got to be part of that culture or don't go. But, hey, you would love this. And that's how they got Jaden Ledee. This guy, 6'9", 240, NBA power forward in the making. And his friends told him, hey, the way you work out, the way you love to play and play defense, you got to go to San Diego State. And he did.
You know, I one of the things I try to do in these interviews, I love the big picture aspect of what we get talking about. And Steve Fisher is one of these guys that just is going to have a place in college basketball history. From the time from winning that championship with Ramil Robinson at the free throw line to the Fab Four connection. And Brian Dutcher's been the head coach for a while now, right? It's 2017 or so, about 5 or 6 years. I mean, he's been there. He's been the head coach for a while. How much, though, is Steve Fisher's presence around this program? How much of it is still, is he still around?
He's still around physically and at most games. And, you know, he retired and probably, you know, Fetcher, who's been with him all the way at Michigan and from day one, I broadcast that first game in 99 when they got blasted. And it was the worst program in the country. It had been that way for a long number of years. But Steve just had the, you know, Steve would walk around campus and he would give tickets out. He'd go, if you had a group and it was, he wouldn't say how many people in the group because it was 10 people. He would go speak to that group. And since I'd been there much longer than him, he would say, hey, I'm giving tickets away. I said, Steve, if you're at a company in San Diego and you put two Aztec tickets on the bulletin board, the next morning, there'll be four tickets on the bulletin board. It's impossible to make this program grow, but good luck to you, buddy. And he worked and worked and worked and worked. And what they started to do in terms of recruiting was get terrific transfers. Way before the transfer portal became what it is today, he would get the great transfers, starting with Tony Bland in Syracuse and a bunch of guys like that, Muhammad Abakar in Florida, Thames, Washington State, a long list of, he used that and knew that was the way to get better, faster, and he did. Steve's presence, he is the father of Aztec basketball and one of the great men I have ever, ever, ever met or been able and privileged to be with and travel with. He has got to be in the Hall of Fame. I don't know why he is.
I'm with you.
Part of that is, hey, I could coach the Fab Five. Right, you know, I could coach those kind of guys. And that kind of works against people, and it's wrong.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you 100% on Steve Fisher. There's a lot of talk about the future of this program, where they may be going in terms of the school, in terms of conferences. But let's talk about the conference they're in, Mountain West. They got four invites into this tournament. There were some good teams that didn't get invited into this thing. How much of the cliche of iron sharpening iron, how much did they get out of conference play?
Conference play surprised me, and I'm the same way. We're in the Mountain West. I'm not a cheerleader. I don't wave the flag. The Mountain West has had some really down years, but they've gotten really, really better in football and in basketball. And I thought this, well, KenPom, rating everything that moves in basketball, said this was the number five strongest conference in the country. That ain't bad for the Mountain West. And I thought if Wyoming had the big guy, Graham Ike, who was going to be the player of the year, they would have been right up there with San Diego State and Boise State and all the other guys that did get in among those you mentioned, the four at-large bids into the Mountain West tournament. So I think it's strong. Obviously, the Pac-12 missing and losing USC and UCLA, they always kept the Aztecs, who've been trying to get into Pac-12 for a long time. USC and UCLA would say, hey, we recruit in San Diego. We're not letting them in the Pac-12 and take away our fertile recruiting ground. But once those two decided to go to the Big Ten, then everybody wants San Diego State in the Pac-12.
Yep, exactly. Ted, great stuff. Really appreciate your time. Hope to run into you this weekend in Houston. And again, good luck to the Aztecs. Appreciate your time.
I love talking to you, Tony, anytime.
Thank you, my friend. Appreciate it. Ted Leitner, play-by-play voice of the San Diego State Aztecs. Again, 31-6 this season, 15-3 in Mountain West Conference play, a team that has been building for something like this for a while. They get in these tournaments with Kawhi Leonard 12 years ago making it. But, again, strong, physical, defensive team out of a Mountain West Conference that he said got a lot of respect this year. Not all the time. I mean, I follow Air Force closely with my ties there, but it's not all the time that the Mountain West has produced a season where you can go down six deep and go, hey, there's some good teams here. Four got into this NCAA tournament, and San Diego State won it, not only the regular season, but the conference tournament, and they are now in the Final Four, something that's been building.
I almost feel like this NCAA tournament is highlighting the smaller conferences.
I do, too. It's waking up.
Look at these guys. Look at these guys. I mean, it's a shame that, you know, we have these two small conference teams are playing against each other.
Yeah.
But even right now, I mean, you know, you have ACC represented, you have the Big East. Right, UConn's in the Big East?
UConn's in the Big East, yep. And the ACC in the Big East, and that's two power sixes.
Power sixes, even though it feels like the Big East is now like trending towards being a smaller conference.
Well, I got a friend of mine who's going to be in town. He works for the Mountain West Conference directly, and he does their like TV show and stuff like that.
Yeah.
He's going to be in town for the Final Four. I guarantee you, privately, he would have said, that's something I never thought I'd check off with this job. Right? Is attending the Final Four with any one of these teams.
Final Four NIT, sure.
Sure. But now he is. Now he's got a team. And if he had told me that there was one, it would probably have been San Diego State.